I would like to read one verse with you, please, in Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6. Verse number 9. And let us not be weary in well doing, for in due if we faint not. Let us not be weary in well doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Now that's all that we'll take time to read, and God will bless to us this brief reading from His precious word. I would just like to use this verse this evening to introduce the few remarks I would like to make about the Lord's work in Brazil. I would divide the verse into three little sections. First of all, we have an exhortation. Then we have a promise. And then we have a condition. We have an exhortation to not be weary in well-doing. We have a promise that if we're not weary in well-doing, then there will be results forthcoming. In due season, ye shall reap. And finally, a condition, if ye faint not. When you think of the exhortation and the words that are used, it would lead us to expect difficulties. Let us not be weary in well-doing. It would lead you to expect problems. It's not going to be easy. Be not weary in well-doing, for in due season ye shall reap. When you think of the promise and the words that are used, it would lead you to expect delays. In due season, there may be no quick returns in this work. You may have to wait for a long time. But in due season ye shall reap, if ye faint not. Now for over 34 years, we have been seeking to spread the gospel in Brazil. I know it's taking the verse right out of its context, but surely preaching the gospel is one form of well-doing. And in the preaching of the gospel, we oftentimes face difficulties and long delays. But the verse constantly brings encouragement that we shall reap if we faint not. I think Brazil is a well-known country, so one or two very brief remarks will be sufficient. A very large country with about 150 million people. We're very thankful to say that in different parts of that land, stretching from the north right down to the south, there are a number of assemblies, not very many. Right down in the extreme south, there is a group of assemblies where quite a number of our brethren from the north of Ireland are labouring. I won't take time this evening to mention names. Then right up in the extreme north, around the River Amazon, you'll find another little group of assemblies, small and weak, but faithful. Then scattered throughout the country in various parts around the central regions, you'll find some more. What I would like to talk about this evening is the state of São Paulo. Not one of the bigger states in the country, in the area, but it is the most populous. More than 20% of the total population of the country live in that one state of São Paulo. which means that in that state we have over 30 million people. I was first attracted to that state many years ago, after spending 5 or 6 years in the extreme south of the country. I began to feel more and more the need of the state of São Paulo, the industrial heart of the country, with many large towns and cities, and practically nothing as far as the gospel was concerned. Eventually, in 1967, we moved into the town of Descalvado. There was no assembly. We knew no one in that area. It was a start from scratch. These many years since then have passed and gone, and I do confess that at times we have perhaps felt wearied in well-doing. There were times of discouragement. I look back today to occasions when we walked the streets of Descalvado from door to door, inviting people along to gospel meetings. Quite often we didn't have a gospel meeting for the simple reason that no one came along to listen. The people in Brazil today are still indifferent to the claims of the gospel. It's not easy to get people to come along to a gospel meeting. But as I look back over those years today, I can thank God that there has been fruit. In that one area around Descalvado where we have lived since 1967, God has been pleased to move and souls have been saved, and today there are 5 little assemblies in that area. There's one in the town of Descalvado, then over to the west there is a little assembly in the town of Ibaté, about 40 miles away. Then going in the other direction, there's an assembly in Porto Ferreira, about 10 miles from Descalvado. And just beyond that again, in the next town up the road, there's a little assembly in Santa Cruz das Palmeiras, and yet another one in the town of Pirassununga. I think because of time this evening, I'll limit my remarks to Pirassununga, where there is a small assembly with about 25 in fellowship. Perhaps of all those assemblies today, the assembly in Pirassununga is the one which gives us most joy. There are 2 distinct stages to the history of that little assembly. We first began to visit that town around the early 1970s, perhaps 71, 72, We began to have meetings in the home of a man who lived on the outskirts of the town. He worked in the Air Force base. There is a large Air Force base there and many people are employed in it. He opened his home for gospel meetings. Right at the beginning of those meetings, we had the joy of seeing a few saved, and the work began to prosper and grow. It wasn't very long until we realized that we would need to have something more permanent and bought a plot of land and built a small room at the back of that plot and began to meet there. The work continued to prosper, and by 1975 a few had got saved and were baptized and a little assembly was formed. It continued to grow and we decided to build a larger hall in the front of that plot of land. When the building was about halfway up, what we didn't even contemplate took place. Most of the believers were employed in the Air Force base. Most of them were transferred by the government to other parts of the country. Within a few weeks, the numbers dwindled and dwindled and dwindled until one Lord's Day, the last remaining family told us that they were going away too. There was only one brother left and 2 sisters. And that brother who was left, although a faithful brother who never missed a meeting, was one who had never opened his mouth, not even in the prayer meeting. I remember well that week going round to visit him in his little workshop. He said, "Well, John, what are we going to do? Everyone's gone and you're left alone." He said, "Well, I've thought seriously about that. There's only one way that we can go. I'm going to have to face it, and you'll have to help me." Every Lord's Day, someone from Descalvado, where I was living at that time, went along and spent the Lord's Day with them. There would only be four or five around the table on the Lord's Day morning. But it continued for some time like that, and then God came in and saved a young man and his wife. And then a young brother from Descalvado moved over there and brought their numbers up to about half a dozen. That didn't happen overnight. It took about 2 or 3 years to build up to that. So in 1988, I think it was, we decided to leave Descalvado and move into Quirasununga to live there too. God has given us times of blessing in Quirasununga. We remained there until a couple of years ago when we moved back to Descalvado again. But that assembly has prospered and grown. Today they have about 25 in fellowship. They have built another little hall at the other end of the town where they carry on a weekly gospel meeting, and a Sunday school over at the other end of the town as well. Every Saturday afternoon, those brethren from Quirasununga go into the local prison. I go with them when I'm there. We go around the cells preaching the gospel to the prisoners. Those cells were made to hold about 4 prisoners each. Normally there would be about 14 or 15 in each cell. Conditions are very, very difficult. But we do have the privilege on every Saturday afternoon of spending an hour with those prisoners preaching the gospel. Some have professed to be saved. Through contact with them, we have been in touch with their families. Some of them have begun to come along to meetings also. And it has been a means of opening many doors. We would ask your prayers for that little company in Quirasununga and for the neighbouring assemblies that I've already mentioned in Descalvado, in Ibate, also in Palmeiras and Porto Ferreira. 5 little companies in the middle of that vast state of São Paulo. But all around them are many, many other towns, large towns, without the gospel. This last 2 years since we left Quirasununga and went back to Descalvado, we've been devoting more and more time to these other towns where there are no assemblies. God has been giving a little blessing. There's a large town called Lemi, just beyond Quirasununga. We've been preaching there for a few years now from time to time, and God has been pleased to save a few in that town. A little hall has been built. A few of those who have professed to be saved have been baptized. No assembly yet, but they come along usually on a Lord's Day morning to Quirasununga to break bread there. Over to the other side of Quirasununga, there's another town called Casabranca. We have a little hall there too. We have just started working in that town, perhaps a year and a half, 2 years ago. For a long time it was just on the doorsteps, and then this little hall became available. In years gone past it had been a Presbyterian church, but their church folded up and the building was left abandoned, and they had it on the market for sale and no one was interested in buying it. I think in desperation they offered it very, very cheaply. We were able to buy that little place and fix it up, and now it is a very nice little gospel hall. But there's no assembly there yet. But one or two have professed to be saved, and every time we go over for a gospel meeting there, they carry on a gospel meeting in that hall every Monday evening. And every time we go over there, there's 20 to 30 people present. 90% of them unsaved adults listening to the gospel. Just recently we started in another town where a family moved, a family from the assembly moved to live in this other town, almost 70 miles away from us. We go along there once a week for a gospel meeting also. If I'm not in a series of meetings, I'll go along. If I can't go along, some of the other brethren from Biras Nunga or some of the neighboring assemblies will go. And a weekly gospel meeting is carried on there. Much more could be said about those little towns and about the work that's going on. But just to leave that part of it, I would try to convey to you the picture of a work that's going along slowly but steadily. We've never seen anything spectacular, never seen great crowds coming to the meetings. There never has been a rush to hear the gospel. But we have been constantly around the doorsteps and preaching in the open air, preaching with our tent. We've had a tent for about 11 years now, in portable halls or in the gospel halls. And at times it would seem that nothing was being done. Perhaps weeks, months would pass without hearing of anyone getting saved. And then one or two more would get saved. But it is a work that is growing, and we can thank God for it. He has raised up some brethren locally that have given of their time and their energies to preach the gospel. And much of the progress that we have seen on the human level has been due to the efforts of these dear brethren, especially some from Discalvado and Pirasanum. From that assembly in Discalvado, two brethren have been commended to the grace of God for the work to which God has called them. They have both left Discalvado and gone into neighboring towns where there was no assembly, and they're laboring there in the gospel. We can thank God for what He has done around those parts. In the remaining moments, I would like to turn to a different aspect of the work, something that has proved to be very fruitful from the very beginning. Right at the start, we had to write and print our own tracts to be able to go around the doors spreading the gospel. Then after a time, we felt that it would be wise to have something for the few Christians who got saved as well. So began to publish a few little booklets on assembly principles and later on opening out into other subjects. This literature work has grown and developed far beyond what we anticipated at the beginning. The reason for that was the results that we began to see from it. Some of that literature spread out far beyond what we had intended. Somehow or other got into the hands of people far away from Discalvado, and they began to write to us. People who were saved, but had no knowledge of assembly principles whatever, and it has opened doors and has led to the establishing of assembly testimony in other parts of the country. One thing that has always been lacking around Brazil is good literature for the edification of the saints. There is a demand for it at the moment. The earlier generation had very little opportunity to go to school, but there is amongst us today a generation that has been to school and university, and they had absolutely nothing to read or study except their Bible. Now, I believe the Bible is sufficient. Nothing more is needed. But at the same time, I think every one of us will acknowledge that we are deeply indebted to the written ministry that we receive in the magazines, in commentaries, and books that circulate amongst us. They've been so helpful. Having felt that need, we started giving more and more time to writing and translation. Some time ago we undertook the task at the request of brethren in Scotland to translate the series of commentaries, What the Bible Teaches, published by John Ritchie. If you know the series, it's quite a big task, covering the entire New Testament. And that has been going on for some time now, and we have almost half of those commentaries translated. Two volumes have already been published and are proving a tremendous help. We intend to go on with that and not only limit ourselves to this series of commentaries, but translate a number of other books as well, for which we have already received permission from the writers and publishers. We would ask your prayers for this ministry of literature, that it might continue to be used of God to the edification and upbuilding of His people. I think I will take 2 or 3 minutes now just to finish off with and give you one example of how useful this literature has been. Maybe 2 years ago, I had a phone call from a young man that I had never met. He lived in a large city called Belo Horizonte, a city with well over 1 million inhabitants, a long distance away from São Paulo. He rung up and introduced himself on the phone and asked if I would go along for some ministry meetings. He wanted to know who he was and where he was from, and when he began to explain where he was from, I realized there would be no point in going along, and I told him so that I wouldn't feel free to go, that I felt that any ministry I would have to give wouldn't be acceptable there. I thought that was the end of the story, but he came back again a week later, and after another refusal came back again and again. I don't know how many times he came onto the phone. And then he tried to pressurize a little, and he began to tell me about having read this literature that we were publishing. He said, "We first got it nearly 2 years ago. When we began to read that," he said, "I got very concerned because I could see that what we were doing was very far removed from the scriptural pattern." He said, "I took it along and showed it to the overseers in our assembly. We decided to meet once a week for prayer and study the scriptures to examine this and look into it." He said, "We have changed a lot of things that we have been doing. Certain activities have been stopped. Certain things that we have been doing for so long, we no longer do. But we would like help." And after a long talk with him on the phone, I felt that in the circumstances I should go along and visit them. I arranged to go, arriving there on a Monday, and promised I would stay until the Friday. It was a long, long journey to get there. Arrived on the Monday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, to be informed on the way from the bus station that there were to be 2 meetings that night. He said, "The first meeting starts at 7:30. It would normally finish around about 8:30. Then we'll have a short interval of about 5 minutes for anyone who wants a drink of water. And you can start again, and no need to worry about the clock second time round." Well, that went on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday with 2 meetings each night. Then on the Wednesday night after the meeting, they came to talk to me again. Said, "Now Friday night, after the second meeting, you'll be going away immediately because your bus leaves at 11 o'clock at night. The only chance we'll have to talk would be tomorrow night, Thursday night, after the meeting. If you don't mind losing a little sleep, we could talk for a little while after the meeting." Very good, we agreed to talk after the meeting. We had been going through the principles of a local assembly all week, and they said they wanted to ask a number of questions. Thursday night, the second meeting finished. By the time everyone got out of the hall, it was about 10 o'clock at night. There were 12 brethren remained behind to talk. There were the overseers from that assembly. There was that young man who had first got in touch with me. There were some brethren from neighboring assemblies who had come along and attended all week.